Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
This episode was recorded live at the Manor Vale Lodge. Conversations on Dance at the Vale Dance Festival is generously underwritten by the Town of Vale. I'm Rebecca King Ferraro.
And I'm Michael Sean Breeden, and you're listening to Conversations on Dance.
Just a quick note about this episode, we did have a little bit of a technical snafu, so we are sharing with you our backup file of this particular event. It was just too good to not share, so thank you for your understanding, and we hope you enjoy.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome back to Conversations on Dance here at the Vale Dance Festival. My name is Michael Sean Breeden.
And I'm Rebecca King Ferraro, and we are doing these, I almost called them festival forums, that's what they used to be called, but these early morning chats for the podcast throughout the festival, so we hope that you will join us for some more.
This morning we are joined by two incredible performing artists with Music from the Soul. We have Leonardo Sandoval and Gregory Richardson. Thank you both for joining us before you jet off to rehearsal and get ready for the upcoming performances. So since we haven't had the pleasure of speaking to either of you before, we want to just kind of hear a little bit of background from each of you about your early interactions with dance. So let's start with Leo. When you first became aware of dance, kind of got that like dance bug.
Hi, good morning, everybody. My father is a musician, so there was music in my house all the time. And as babies, the memory that everybody has, like me and all my brothers, like if there was music playing, we were bouncing in tempo. Fast forward to preschool, I was dancing in preschool every single break that we have, or like Mother's Day party, I was dancing in every class, and my teachers were like, asked my mom, maybe he should be doing some professional dance classes. So that's how I got into ballet at the age of 6. And then my ballet teacher told my parents too as well that I had a very musical ear, that I should be doing percussive dance or like some kind of dance that it's more related to music, and that's how I got into tap. And I used to say like tap actually chose me and not me, not the other way. And since then, I never stopped.
Gregory, let's talk a little bit about your background with music. Tell us how you first became interested in that, and then what led you to composing.
Sure. My father is also a musician. Mm-hmm. He's a blues singer and guitarist, and played in the church. Mm-hmm. My mother played piano. She like took lessons her whole life, wasn't really a musician, but kept a lot of music. I was allowed to listen to her music collection, but not my dad. So that actually had a really big influence on me, is like having access to my mom's CDs and tape cassettes. I didn't grow up with dance. My parents did a lot for us, a lot of like classes and extracurricular activities, but dance just wasn't on their radar. So I had some very like funny notions about like, you know, like what I thought all dance was just like modern dance and something we would like make fun of in high school. But I realized actually really recently that I love dance. I just wasn't connecting with a lot of the dance music that I was seeing. You know, whether, you know, I like some classical and certain composers, but not not all of it, you know what I mean? So I was realizing, like, if the music doesn't connect with me right away, it's gonna be very hard for a dance performance to move me, you know what I mean? And then my first exposure to dance was playing in a band called Darwin D's, where it was an indie band, but we would do these little dance numbers in between songs. And Michelle Dorrance, who is our artistic director for Dorrance Dance, was our bass player. So she would help choreograph these little in-between dance numbers, like we were just playing, you know, in like gigs, like in bars and stuff like that. And then, but it had us all start dancing. And then Leo's encouraged all the musicians to start doing some movement on stage too, whether it's just like body percussion or, you know, simple stuff. So that was kind of my intro to
Did you take any classes, or are you just kind of like learning on the job?
I started taking some tap classes when I first fell in with Dorrance Dance. Mm-hmm. And then realized, like many people, it's 1,000 times harder than it was. And a little painful on the feet too. And I intend to circle back to it. I haven't, but I do go. Me and Leo actually go to the club a lot, just for like house music, like dancing. So, you know, just dancing.
Yeah.
So I've taken some like house dance classes and different classes just for fun, but not a lot of tap.
Yeah.
So Leo, at what point did you decide that relocating to the States was something that you were interested in, and was that kind of artistically driven?
Definitely, yeah. I come from a very tiny city in the state of São Paulo, and I was living there up until my 21 years, and I decided to move to Rio de Janeiro, a bigger city, to seek for work. And I couldn't find actually a lot of work in dance. I was teaching a lot, and I was part of a dance company there, company Stephen Harper, who was a tap dance company, but we were performing like maybe twice or once a year. And I started to do street performance, like busking in Rio. And like after 4 years doing that, I was just, well, if I'm doing this here, I might as well do that in New York City. So that's what it actually drove me to move. But I knew I was falling into a safety blank because the tech community in New York City is very tied together. So as soon as I got there, like people like Michelle Dorrance, Chloe Arnold, they were receiving me with open arms. Mm-hmm. And within 1 year, I was already performing with Michelle and dancing in her company and touring. Kind of.
How did you connect with Michelle? Did you already know her prior to living in the States?
Yeah, I met her back in Brazil. Then I met her another time that I was here when I was 18 years old at Los Angeles Tap Festival. The tap community is really tied together. Mm-hmm. So even if you don't actually know the dancer in person, they know of you, like through social media, internet,
right,
and things like this.
Yeah. Right. So I wonder how, Gregory, then you kind of, the two of you connected. It was through Michelle Dorrance, but when did you realize that you would artistically work well together?
Well, there's a lot of different tap dance styles that you see within the company, and some people are like, some people have great memories, you know, some people are just like really dependable team members,
mm-hmm.
some people are flashy soloists, you know, some people are really graceful, there's all these different styles. But everyone is, in tap dance, is a soloist because it's part of the art form, you know, it's like improvisation. And some people's style, I just connect with more, and some people less.
Mm-hmm.
I always say that tap dance to me sounds kind of like Indian classical music, where it's like the tabla player's like going crazy. And if you know Indian classical music, you're like, oh, wow, that's great. But if you don't, you're like, I don't know what they're doing. It looks great. It's like flashy.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
A lot of notes coming out, but I don't quite get it. And I'm a professional musician,
right?
So I'm like, I don't know what they're saying, really. There's a few dancers like Leo who I would see them and be like, I hear you. I see what you're like really saying something. You're like really in a groove, and you're not just like trying to do as much as you can, which I'm not saying that that's bad. There's just different styles, but that's what connects with me. So back to his busking in New York City, everybody was talking about like this new guy, Leo, like he's making his living busking like in New York City. And I was actually like going through like a kind of a broke period as an artist, you know, at that time. And I asked him, can I go with you? Can we do this together?
Uh-huh.
And he graciously said yes. So we would go to the Highland Park in Manhattan,
mm-hmm.
and busk for a couple hours and like sit around and split up the coins and the dollars. And that's how we started like building our repertoire.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We've already started kind of delving into how integral music is to tap. And I mean, we always think of ballet, of course, it's like they are so, it's impossible to disentangle the two. But with tap, you're literally being a musician. Can we talk about this relationship a little bit more? You're just so kind of naked, you know, we all can hear if it's not gelling, you know, what's that like to have something that those two art forms for tap cannot be divorced of one another?
They can't be divorced because the tap is the music, right? Mm-hmm. It becomes part of the score.
Right.
I mean, they can be divorced actually, but it makes for really bad performance. So like what I always say and like what we agree on a lot is that like a lot of sometimes tap dance can sound like it's like tap dance on top of music. Like, well, I have this great composition.
Mm-hmm.
Cool, it's finished. Let's put some tap dance on top of it. It's rare that that works for me or that feels gratifying.
Mm-hmm.
So what better is that like the tap becomes this integral part of the composition, and if you take the tap out, the composition's not as good
mm-hmm.
anymore. So that's kind of like what we're striving for. It's like I think of the tap dancers as a like an 8-piece percussion ensemble that happens to look great while they're doing it,
mm-hmm.
but not that it's like, to me it's more music than dance. The
right.
music is first, and then if you can make some cool formations out there, like great. But my concern is like what those 8 percussionists sound
yeah.
like and are doing.
Right.
Definitely the music comes first. Like even when we are creating something, it's about the sound or like how we want to sound or like how the music is becoming before actually how it looks like on the stage.
Mm-hmm. How do you feel like the way you approach work might be different from other tap companies or other tap performers? Because that's not something that we're super familiar with. So I just wonder how your approach differs.
I think the first thing is like we try to not differentiate our positions within the company. Like we are both equally important, and within the artistic direction of the company, like it's the both of us.
Mm-hmm.
So if Greg has an idea, we always meet together first and digest that together before bringing to other company members. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that the music comes first, and the forms follow the sound, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we are not trying to look in a certain way to just be cool
right.
before making sure how we sound.
Right.
Yeah.
And I'd also just add, like, you know, there's nothing new under the sun. Like, most everything we're trying has been tried by
yes.
people for decades.
Sure,
decades.
Sure.
So I've definitely fallen in that trap before when we first started being like, we're like pioneering this new thing. And then, like,
no.
someone calling me out being like, look at this guy who did that in 1960. Or, like, whatever. So, it's just new variations on the same,
sure.
same ideas.
Yeah.
Can we talk some about the improvisational nature? What you're doing, how much of what we're seeing as audience members is just happening kind of spur of the moment, and how much is laid out before?
Usually when you see one dancer performing by themselves, it's improvised. So like look out for those places in the performance. But the musicians also have a lot of improvised solos within the compositions too as well. So I think makes up for a very fresh show every time we perform. It's never the same. It's never, never the same.
Yeah.
Yeah. Could we dive into that a little bit more? I'm just curious. So for instance, among different ballet choreographers, improv can mean so many different things. Like, you know, someone might give you a phrase and then say, well, now you have to spell your name in it, or we're doing it backwards, or, you know, like there's structure to the improv, but how much structure is there for tap performers?
Mm-hmm.
It could be like basically the space of time that you have to perform,
mm-hmm.
like all you have from, you have 4 or 8 bars to perform, to improvise,
right.
And that happens within the show too as well. There's this one solo that Orlando Hernandez does, like right in the beginning of the show, that is completely a cappella. It's just him on the stage and there's no time. So he's literally free to do whatever he wants.
Right.
He's basically just having a conversation between the light designer,
mm-hmm.
Between him and the light designer, like if he changes one position, the lights change for this. If he changes this other way, the lights change. And those are the cues.
Right.
But within that, he can stay here for as much as he wants, you know. So it's really freeing for us to watch.
And then what about for the musicians? How much improving is happening there?
The musician improv is more obvious. It's something you'd recognize more from like a jazz feeling. Okay, the saxophone player is taking a, so you get it that,
right.
that it's improvised. It's a little bit, I mean, there's a lot of creativity there, but there's a little bit more pressure on us to hold the structure because we're, you know, we are like the kind of the map of, of the piece. So, our job is a little bit different. It's a little bit more like structural rather than, improvisational in general.
Right.
So let's talk about Music from the Soul. What was the genesis of this project and what kind of artistic ideas were you eager to explore here?
The first one is that tap dance is music, and it's part of the African diasporic tradition, and it's an American art form. I think we came from that and decided to explore those ideas within my Brazilian background, Greg's background in house music, electronic music, jazz music, gospel music, and
I think also expressing the personalities of our different company members, like it's a really diverse crew. So we have our saxophone player Jose Cruzate is from Cuba, but he also, like in the show, sings some Yoruba chants, which are like from his religion in Cuba. Gerson Lanza is from Honduras, so he brings his own thing. There's quite a few Brazilian,
four of us,
dancers in the show. Leo's husband is also our pianist. His name's Noé Keynes. He's an astronomer, but he's also like a concert pianist and sings Renaissance classical music, like he's a professional singer. So like the goal is kind of, the goal has to be somehow to tie in all of those like abilities and personalities in. So like that's really what that's the main goal.
How do you collaborate with all of the company members to bring their backgrounds into the final product that we see on stage?
It's tricky. I think for Leo, because they're tap dancers, like they all play the same instrument. And I think if you're used to the dance studio culture, you show up and someone's in charge and you're gonna say like, hey, try this, do this, and they just know, they've been doing it since they're little kids. You do it, I do it, I'll learn it, whatever. And then if Leo gives them some freedom to do an improv, they'll do it. Musicians don't work that way, you know, and we're all playing something different, so when we get in a room, everybody wants to like have their idea, I like this, I don't like that, and everybody has these different strengths, and like Noé's a concert pianist, I couldn't necessarily even write something that could utilize his full abilities, so I have to work with him. So what you get is usually something, I think, better. I think it usually comes out better than what it would have been if I tried to do it by myself. But it also feels like a lot of compromise too sometimes. So you're like, you know, it's just like personalities and, you know what I mean? So
how did you assemble this team, and does it ever shift like year to year? Obviously you're looking to kind of group together people that are offering something so unique and individual. I'm just curious how you become introduced to these people and realize they're going to be a good fit for Music from the Soul.
Within the dancers is basically dancers that I already knew somehow throughout my life. Ana, Gisele, and Lucas, I know them, the other three Brazilians in the company, I know them since I was a kid living in Brazil. And when I moved here, a couple of them started moving around too as well. And I couldn't help but calling them to dance with us. Gerson Lanza, the guy Greg was talking about that is from Honduras, I met him in Brazil. And I was living in Brazil, and he went there to just study a little bit and actually work with tap dance too as well. And we busk in Brazil. All that to say that it's like, it's all personal connections, like people that we actually know and we like to be around, and we know that are talented and we trust.
That
you
can compromise with.
Yes.
And I would add the people that we look up to like our bassist, Jennifer Vincent, our drummer Josh Davis, like they're phenomenal players. Yeah. So they're people that like I'm still like I take lessons with Jennifer when she has time.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So it's also people that we look up to and can learn from.
So Greg, have the musicians been inspired to also start doing some dancing? I know you said that you have them do some sorts of things. How are you getting them involved in that? Will we be seeing that here at the festival?
Oh yeah, yeah, you will. It's great, you know, like Jose's from Cuba, like movement is in his, you have to tell him not to move. You know, it's like a little kid in class, like you just sit still, you know, like the lights are on you, like even on stage, I'm like, Jose, just if you're not supposed to be moving, just be still, because the focus is on the dancers, like you're not invisible, like you're not in the orchestra pit, like we're downstage,
right?
which we did on purpose, because we wanted the audience to visually see that we're one group and not like the band at the back of the stage or the band down in the orchestra pit or something like that. Josh Davis, our drummer, is a natural mover. Leo introduced this like this first body percussion, he was like adding extra like hip sways and like he just like does the movement for fun, like any like if we're like out, he'll just like start doing it. So like you'll see everybody's different personality and everybody moves.
One thing I was thinking, looking at your website, for example, the company members are listed, there's dancers and the musicians are there, everyone's listed, and that's not something that you would see necessarily in like a ballet company, for example. So, and you're talking about how important music is, and is that common within a tap company, or is this just like a continued part of your mission to keep music so close to the dance?
I do think it's common within tap companies to put the musicians and the dancers in the same place. Mm-hmm. But what I think we are doing is actually, we are not trying to think ourselves as a dance company or a band, right? We are something that is in the blur. So it's really upfront that Greg and I are the sole leaders of the company. And even if I don't have a guitar, if he doesn't have a tap shoe, we both are representing the company in the same way. So I think that would be the only different point. Like, I would never do a performance just with recorded music, while I think maybe some other dance companies, if it's like a small performance or something that they cannot bring the band to the show, they would take that compromise, you know?
Right.
And that's not something we want to do.
Yeah.
Can we just hear a little bit about what the audience is going to see on August 2nd when you guys are performing? What's the program looking like?
The show calls I Didn't Come to Stay. It's a piece that we started making in the peak of the pandemic. It was a commission from Marks and Process. We, summer 2020, we went to Catspin with a very small group of people and started working on that. And because it was the peak of the pandemic, we were like really hype and happy to be together. So in my head, this performance and this show is like a celebration of celebrations, like being just celebrating being together. So you will see a big party on the stage, a big carnival party on the stage. For me, it's almost like a carnival fever dream happening constantly, like throughout the whole hour.
Yeah, and I'll add just what you'll see will be a five-piece band with piano, drums, saxophone. He also plays flute. I play electric bass and electric guitar. Jennifer plays upright bass and cello. Mm-hmm. So between the five of us and the instrument switching, it's a lot of music. Dancers playing percussion, everybody singing. We're really proud of the show. And it's like a big production. It's eight dancers and five band members.
Yeah.
So it's cool.
I loved so much about what you guys did on opening night. It was so fun to see you. But one of the things that I loved the most was how you involved the audience. And so I wonder, is that something that you do often? Is that something we will be seeing again on August 2nd?
Not on August 2nd, but we usually do audience participation in our shows. Like in our previous show, Partido, there's a clave pattern that it goes over the whole concert. And by the end, like the audience kind of knows how the clave is going.
We will be out in the audience.
Yes.
That is a form of audience participation.
Yeah, it's true. And we encourage the audience to holler and scream and shout with us, because there's a lot of room for that to happen too as well.
You don't have to encourage the male audiences to get involved. They just love it.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting idea to me, because it is such a, you know, the way that the audience participates and lives in the music with you feels so important. And I'm wondering, like, being in a proscenium theater, like, does that ever feel like too distant for you, like wanting to have that like immediate feedback and energy from an audience? Like, how do we negotiate that?
I think it's the same for every performer, right? Like, I'm assuming you're both dancers.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You feel that, right? You feel like the audience is like 100 feet away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. You know, like, it's never going to feel like, the rehearsal room for me is always going to feel like this special magical place where like, oh, we're like making this thing, and we're stirring the pot, and like, we're all here, and we're sweaty, and like, nobody wants to leave. Can you translate that to the proscenium stage? Like, I don't know. You know, like, I think it's easier in a black box.
Right.
For intimacy's sake, it's a challenge, you know, but you want to have bigger audiences and beautiful amphitheaters, but
you can feel that energy from the audience, right? Like, you, like, that's like a different aspect, like you're saying, how do you replicate the studio feeling, but when you have that audience and you do have that participation, like, I could feel the energy from the audience going to you guys, you know?
Yeah.
I wonder, since you both are participating always, I assume, in your works, how is that a challenge when you think of a choreographer? They set the piece, they go out, they get to view it as an audience member, make changes. Is that challenging for you to not maybe have that audience view of what you're doing?
Yeah, it is. Like, I bought this cordless system for my guitar because I wanted to be able to go out and like listen to soundcheck, because Leo always listens for the soundcheck, but it didn't really work. I got it 10 feet away and it started like, I was like, all right, but yeah, there's challenges. Also, Leo's usually like the face of, because, you know, you come here and people's like a dance festival, like choreographer, so he graciously helps me keep clawing my like appearance out, being like, we're co-artists. We both do a lot of work behind the scenes, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there are challenges.
But. Yeah.
On opening night, Dario Nannarelli joined you guys. I'm just wondering, and that's such a veil thing, you know, the sort of last minute festival artists will come together. Are you gonna have another chance to do something like that while you're here?
I don't think so, because everything that we're doing now is
geared
related to the performance. But we had a lot of fun performing with Dario, yeah. And like you said, it's like the Veil Festival kind of model.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so amazing. I knew him actually from before. We went to the school at Jacob School together. My first step dance class that I took here in New York City, he was in the class really young. Yeah, it was really fun to have Dario performing with us and reconnecting with him too as well.
He did a great job too. Yeah. He just picked that up like the 2 days prior.
A day prior.
Yeah. I was gonna ask how he integrated in, so I guess seamlessly. what are you hoping that audiences will take away from your evening of dance and music?
Far and foremost, that we are one group. I know we are pressing this button a lot, but tap dance is music, and we are all together. Like, there's no differentiation between all the performers on the stage. I don't even want to say dancers and musicians. We are all the same. So tap dance is music, and that it is an African American art form.
Yeah, and have fun. Like, we're having fun. I think one of the best attributes of the company itself and the show is that you can really see people are just enjoying being with each other and like making music. It's not like a serious, you know, there's some quiet moments, but it's not like a, you know, a stiff, like, you know, thing. So enjoy yourself.
Mm-hmm. Great. I think we have time to open the floor to audience questions. Bruce, would you like to go first?
So when are we live? Am I live?
Yes.
Okay. So when opening night came, we look up and there's the floor, so we know it's gonna be tap. But then Leo comes out and he forgot his shoes.
How did you know he forgot it?
And so my question is, you know, in terms of things, everything having been done before, that was the first time that I can recall seeing a real, seriously kind of tap thing, but in bare feet. And I wonder if you could talk about that a little.
Yeah, that first little strip of the performance that we did in the opening night was a body percussion section that actually we do in our show too as well. And I really prefer to do body percussion either with my socks on or barefoot. So it was an idea to start the show just like that. But I liked it to play a little bit with it, like saying that I forgot my shoes as I was walking in.
That was a joke? Yeah.
I thought you were serious.
No. We were walking in, and he goes, I forgot my shoes. And I was like, oh, shit, what do we do? But I knew that you did it barefoot, but I thought you were going to bring them out and then you put them on later.
No.
So, oh, man. Yeah, I didn't catch that.
I wanted as the choreographer, to make our entrance as a little conversation and make the conversation become a song. So I was looking for things like to act with Greg, but like really make it look like a real acting, not like, oh, walking in, I forgot my shoe. No, we can do it. So I tried to scare you a little bit.
I was like, should we go back?
Yeah.
It's too late.
I almost start backing up and I wish you would start pushing me. And I'm like, well, maybe that's a little too much, but yeah. It worked, yeah. I'm glad you were surprised.
Any other questions? Oh. We'll come back. Music from the Soul is such a fantastic name for your company. Mm-hmm. How did you come up with that? Sudden Insight.
I think it was Greg.
Was it?
Yeah, I think it was. It was actually the name of our first show. This is how we actually started the company. While Greg and I was performing on the streets of New York, somebody came up to us and asked, oh, do you guys have a production that you can put it on a stage? We're like, sure, we did. So we started calling people. He called a couple musicians that still performing with us, and I call some dancers that are also performing with us, and then we built this one night performance. And the name of that show was Music from the Soul. And I believe you came up with the name. Yeah, you. Maybe. I can't remember exactly when or how.
We definitely had some disagreements over, once that name was in the pot, we had some disagreements over what, because Parangolay was another one. I was like, what does that mean?
Yeah, because after we came up with the name for the show, and then other productions were asking us to make other pieces, we're like, well, we need a name for the company. And we're like changing the name of the company, like Parangolay Collective.
Tropicalista,
yeah, we had a bunch of names. Then we landed, we should just call Music from the Soul, the name of our first show, and we liked the name, so that's how, yeah.
I liked Tropicalista better, but we could already see that we were going to be pigeonholed as being kind of like exotic, which, I mean, we are, and that's fine a little bit, but we get overly pushed as, like, Brazilian, like tropical, like fruit in their hair, like, like it happens, you know what I mean? Yeah. But what I'm really happy about is that we didn't name it like Sandoval Richardson or something like that, like that all the company members can really feel like it's not, like we all belong to it and has a name that's bigger than somebody's last name.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I was intrigued by what you said about tap as a product of the African diaspora. And I was curious because I've always thought of it as an African-American art form from the US, but can you speak a little bit to the Pan-American roots? Was what you were learning in Brazil, did it basically come from the US, or is there are there different traditions throughout Latin America?
There are different traditions of like what we call sapateado, which is the translation for tap dance, but it's a broader name, you know. Mm-hmm. There are percussive dances in Brazil that you do with your feet, that you're hitching your feet on the floor, you have a type of shoe, and you're making percussive music as you're dancing, but it's not the same technique. So that's why I say that it's tap dance is part of the African diasporic way, because there's many other ways of making music with your feet that are connected through the African history, or like, the enslaved people being brought to the Americans and like spread all over North America and South America. There is some language and communication throughout those that were dissolved and evolved in different ways in Brazil, in different ways in America, in different ways in other places. So, making percussive music with your feet is something that is inherently African, diasporic. Yeah.
That's
I'm a very amateur musician and tap dancer, and I could never improv on the piano, but I prefer improvised tap music, doing tap, and I wonder which you prefer those parts of your performances. Do you prefer the improv?
Oh, I do like to improv. I don't know if I prefer. I don't know if I have a preference. I like to float from one side to the other, I think. Yeah. I don't know. Do you have a preference of?
I spend most of my time spent composing and practicing. I like the bigger group picture. It's more exciting to me, like getting the horn part right and the piano part, making it all come together. Taking a killer solo is great for the ego, too, but that's a very small part of my time.
And when you do the audience participation part, do you make a judgment on how rhythmic your audience is? And do you bail out early if they're not getting it?
That's so good.
Never, no.
It depends on, we do school shows for all different ages. You have to know what's appropriate. And like a group of 8-year-olds in the Bronx from like all over Latin America are going to get a crazy clavi like right away. Whereas a group of like 40-year-olds in like Idaho might not get it. There's some... there's some difference in ability.
But no judgment.
I have one more thought. We're talking about improv. At what point does that kind of factor into your training? If we're learning, obviously music is pretty formal in the beginning, but improv has to be so second nature to what you do now. You must have started experiencing that pretty young as well.
Yeah, it's part of tap dance culture and like you have to be a good improvisation to understand what tap dance actually is too as well. It's a solo art form. It started as a solo art form. It was a battle between dancers, that's how it started. So you have to have control and understand music, understand tempo, rhythm, even being a little melodic too as well. So you have to spend some time on your own working on your voice, and that's basically learning how to improvise. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah. So you said Michelle Durance was playing bass in your group? So that's a whole new world that we learned about Michelle. One of the things, when she was here a lot early on, what I remember her telling us was that tap started off in the States as sort of partly a form of communication. Because you're speaking a language that the slave owners can't understand, and so you can communicate that way. And I wondered, that seems to me possibly also the case in Brazil. But then the last question, just to kind of throw this out there, is can they dim the lights less in the theater so that these guys could actually see out? And would you like that, if that was actually possible?
I think that might be kind of intimidating. It's not that, for me.
I didn't understand
the question.
He's saying
if they had the lights up in the house, you could see the audience better.
Uh-huh.
Like, would you prefer that?
No, yeah, no. It is intimidating.
Yeah. It's so much better having like a black. Yeah.
It's more the distance of a large theater. Like, it's not. Right. It's not that you can't see them in the dark. It's just that the stage is so big. If it's like a duet or two people out there, like if you're on the middle of that stage, it just feels like the stage just never ends, and like the people are like. So far, it feels like you're under a microscope or something.
Mm-hmm. On that note, though, I really enjoy looking for people in the audience. I like looking to the ones that I can see it, to connect and really look in the eyes and dance for pointed people sometimes, but not if the whole house was on. Yeah, that would be terrifying.
Yeah.
Communication question?
Yes, yeah. What I believe Michelle is probably talking about is in North Carolina, actually, when the enslaved people got to start to communicate between other groups throughout drumming and starting a revolution, and the drums were taken away, and then that music also was taken away, and then translate that music to the body. So that's one of the beginning or origins of tap dance, and that actually happened in Brazil too as well. Not as expressive as in here, but the drums are also taken away, and like for a period of time it was prohibited to play drums in the entire country. So that language couldn't die, so you have to translate that art form to some other parts of your body, and that's how it goes, and that's it. Another link to that whole African diasporic roots of tap dance, like it's that, you know, you just play the music in the way that you can find with your body, with your hands, with your feet, with shoes, with no shoes.
There's a particular rebellion that you can look up called the Stoma Rebellion, which was the people were communicating with drums, and they started going from town to town picking up, like getting like a convoy, like getting bigger as they were going, just marching, not quite sure where they were leaving, but it got to be hundreds of enslaved people. And they burned down their houses and they killed some of the overseers on their way. And after that, it was enacted like laws in North Carolina, like prohibiting drums and gatherings of certain groups. And then those laws were just adopted by other states immediately. So it was kind of like, it was like a codified legal movement in the US that was like, no more drumming, which went to the feet. But I've also seen videos of percussive dance in Western Africa that kind of debunks some of that. It's like an easy narrative to be like, oh, they took away the drums, so they just started doing it with their feet.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of truth in that, but if you really peel back the layers, there's percussive dance in West Africa. There's hand boning and all those other things like body percussion that people generally, I think it's just like a kind of easy, romantic, simplified version of history to say that like all of that happened because of drums being illegal, but you know, there's a lot of subtlety to it too.
Yeah, the percussive dance was already there before the drumming. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Any other questions? Yeah.
So it was interesting to hear how much improv is at the heart of what you do. And we've had other talks here where there was a sense of, well, ballet has this very structured set of movements, and maybe contemporary dance, it's harder to communicate what to do on stage, and you guys are just, sounds like there's a lot of freelancing. You just mentioned that there also might be some competitiveness, some one-upsmanship as a part of that, and could you say some more about how that works?
Yeah, if you think about like hip-hop or breakdancing, like, you know, those battles that happen, those are actually modeled from tap dance battles. Like when the art form started, like the way that people were socially dancing it was in forms of battles with the judge watching two dancers battling within each other, like looking for rhythm, for style and musicality, and all those. It was a competition.
Speed.
And this is still exists within the art form throughout this day. Like tap dancers are really, we say that we like to cut off other people when we are doing our solos, very graciously and very, you know, we're still friends, but we are going for the neck. Yeah, we are trying to show off, and we are trying to make the best as we're going. Like we do say, like, we dance to express and not to impress, but you know.
And I'll say I do think that competitive background is what pushes the boundary into also sometimes solos just being like, you didn't have to do all that. You know, imagine like if a flute player is just like 30-second notes where it's like, okay, that's really cool. Like, you must have practiced a really long time, but like, it can go into the border of like not being musical too, because you're just trying, because you've been in this situation your whole life where you're trying to like show that you can keep up with everybody else.
Yeah.
Well, thank you all so much for being here. Thank you both.
Yeah,
it's so
you.
Wonderful to hear more about your backgrounds and about Music from the Soul. We are looking forward to seeing you guys on the 2nd.
We can't wait.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Conversations on Dance is part of the Acast Creator Network. For more information, visit conversationsondancepod.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.